This time on episode 274 of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., we'll be talking about Captain Marvel, weekly Marvel news, and your feedback.
I'm Chris Farrell from the All Things Good and Nerdy podcast, a wacky weekend morning show, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out right now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and the opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other awesome geeky shows over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You have been granted clearance by Director Alfonso Mack McKenzie. Stand by for a S.H.I.E.L.D. debriefing. All information to be discussed here is classified and may only be discussed among agents granted clearance by the S.H.I.E.L.D. Director.
Now it's time for your scheduled debriefing. I'm Director SP.
I'm Agent Haley.
I'm Agent Lauren.
And welcome to Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a Marvel Comic Universe fan show. This show is recorded on Tuesday, March 19th, 2019, live from the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. studios and broadcast Star Force wide via www.geeks.live. Come on and join our live chat as we record. Ladies, happy National Certified Nurses Day.
They should be celebrated. Thank you, nurses.
Indeed.
Yes, especially since my daughter is going to become a certified nurse one day after lots of school and debts and stuff. But yes, she's headed for it.
Congrats, Star Pie daughter.
Yay! All right, in the meantime, since that's going to take a while, we'll get into this discussion. Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a fan-based podcast on the ABC television show Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the multiple Marvel small screen series, and the Marvel cinematic and comic book universes in general.
Because of Diagonal Toast and Mr. Snoopers.
If you would like to talk to us about Diagonal Toast and Mr. Snoopers, you can visit our website, legendsofshield.com.
If you'd like to tell us your long-term memories that prove you're not a Skrull, you can leave us a voicemail at 844-THE-BUS-1. That's 844-843-2871.
If you'd like to share cat pictures with us, which we would very much appreciate, you can visit our Facebook page, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Podcast.
You can also share your cat pictures with us on Twitter at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And you can see cats in the background of this video by checking out our video companion on YouTube at youtube.com/GunnaGeek.
You can tell your Amazon device to enable Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. skill.
You can join our Discord server chat at GunnaGeek.com/Discord.
And remember, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a proud member of the GunnaGeek.com network.
We have a one-shot for you today. We're talking about Captain Marvel, the latest in the MCU series of movies. It had its USA, that's United States of America, debut on March 8th, 2019. It was rated PG-13 and had a runtime of 2 hours and 3 minutes. And that is not counting the trailers, of course. Lauren, who directed this movie of Captain Marvel?
This movie was directed by Anna Boden, who has 10 directing credits starting in 2003. A couple of documentaries and documentary shorts, a movie called Sugar, the movie It's Kind of a Funny Story, 2 episodes of The Big C, 2 episodes of The Affair, 3 episodes of Billions, 1 episode of Room 104, and this episode of Captain Marvel.
Anna had a companion director, didn't she?
Yes, she did. Ryan Fleck, who has 16 directing credits starting in 2002, who has also worked with Anna Boden on things like her documentary and documentary short movies. Also, 7 episodes of In Treatment, the movie It's Kind of a Funny Story, the same 2 episodes of The Big C. 3 episodes of Looking, 4 of The Affair, 3 episodes of The Billion, 1 of Room 104, and Captain Marvel.
I'm sensing a trend now with these Marvel movies that they have multiple directors for everything, and I think it works out well because you have A and B set going on. Sometimes it's really A and A set, but they have multiple filmings going on and having multiple directors that's capable of doing it or doing event shots or B shots or whatever, while the prime director is off doing some stuff. I think it works well. The Russo brothers do it. I think it worked well here for Anna and Ryan. So I'm wondering if we're going to see this more and more for sci-fi and action flicks in the future. What do you think, Lauren?
I don't know. This, I think, was a pretty good directing team for it. Maybe not the best, but it was pretty good. I think we got some good stuff out of it. And I think that, again, the only way that people get ahead in the entertainment industry is if somebody gives them a chance. So I look forward to seeing what this team does, you know, moving forward with the cachet that directing Captain Marvel gives them.
Haley, we had a bunch of credited writers for this movie, so why don't you break them down for us?
All right. Well, starting off, the directors, Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, also have writing credits for this film. Story and screenplay credit to Geneva Robertson-Dwarrett. She has 9 writing credits starting in 2018, which include the newest Tomb Raider movie and Captain Marvel, and her announced projects include Gotham City Sirens and Artemis. Nicole Perlman, whose name we have seen on some other Marvel properties, has 6 writing credits starting in 2014, including Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain Marvel, and Pokemon Detective Pikachu. She has a story credit for that. Meg LaFauve, whose name I probably just pronounced, also has a story credit for this film. 7 writing credits starting in 2011, including Inside Out, The Good Dinosaur, and this movie, Captain Marvel.
Now, Lauren, we have some producers for this movie, and a lot of these names will sound familiar to most of Marvel fans.
Indeed, they will and should. We have main producer Kevin Feige, executive producers Victoria Alonso, Louis Desposito. I don't know why he was suddenly French for a second there. Stan Lee, Jonathan Schwartz, Patricia Witcher, Lars P. Winther, and Mary Livanos.
And as always, we'll break down most of the main cast at least, and we won't bore you with every single actor that occurred in this movie, but we will go over several of the main characters. First of all, Brie Larson played Carol Danvers, aka Veers, aka Captain Marvel.
Samuel L. Jackson, who some people may be familiar with, reprised his role of Nick Fury.
Ben Mendelsohn played Talos/Keller.
Jude Law brought in a great performance as Young Wog.
Annette Bening played the Supreme Intelligence / Dr. Wendy Lawson.
Lashana Lynch brought her A-game as Maria Rambeau.
Clark Gregg came in and reprised his role as Agent Coulson.
Renee Timpty played Bron Char.
Gemma Chan played Minerva.
Lee Pace played Ronan.
Jamon Hansu played Korath, and you could recognize him through all the makeup.
Algenis Perez-Soto played Atlas. And because she's not listed here, I wanted to bring in just a special little nod to the actress who played Monica Rambeau, Akira Akbar. She was tiny and adorable.
She was, and I'm really hoping that we see her character, obviously not her in the future, but her character in the future. It was a great add to the movie. So we oftentimes start talking about movies or TV shows, and we're related to the central theme, and oftentimes we just go with the theme being the title, and the title in this case is Captain Marvel. So Lauren, I'm having a problem here. I don't think it's obvious enough. What is the meaning of Captain Marvel?
Well, so back in the day, we had the Captain Marvel from DC, and then we had Captain Marvel from Marvel. And if you want to find out the whole interesting story about why the movie Shazam is being called Shazam and why he is no longer called Captain Marvel and why Captain Marvel is called Captain Marvel and why she's no longer Miss Marvel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can find a whole host of sites to tell you that. And in fact, at the Alamo Drafthouse, where I went to go see the movie, a good chunk of the pre-show was dedicated to that whole history, along with 90s flashback stuff. It was great, by the way. I did not realize. Do you all remember this one Athlete's Foot commercial where there's this pharmacist talking about... Anyway, the pharmacist was played by Clark Gregg. Who knew?
Oh. Fast acting, tenactin.
Yes.
It's funny.
I'm just laughing again, thinking about that. Anyway, there's a whole long history there. And Carol Danvers, as of, I believe, 2012, question mark, has been promoted from Ms. Marvel to Captain Marvel. Rightly so, because she's actually a major in the U.S. Air Force.
So they demoted
her. Yeah, she's actually, there was a previous Captain Marvel who was played by Mar-Vell, who was Mar-Vell, who was a Kree warrior, who's actually partially responsible for her getting her powers, which is sort of alluded to in the movie, kind of, a little bit.
I kind of like the changes in the movie.
So did I!
Yeah, I was going to say that I did like the gender swaps and the change-ups of the character origin and stuff like that, I think.
Are we just getting into it now?
Let's just get into it.
Well, no, hold on. There's something that we need to discuss first. We really want to get into it.
Carol is Captain Marvel.
Okay.
Carol Danvers. Haha. I have my Carol.
They were sold out by the time I bought my tickets.
I got mine. Well, they still had them left when I got mine.
So my son actually sent me a Pop Funko of Captain Marvel. It's actually a bobblehead Captain.
All the Marvel ones are bobbleheads.
I did not know that.
Yep.
Well, I have got this. And then remember our little boxes that we were getting, the Marvel crates? You guys remember that?
Yeah, they're sold through Amazon now.
Yep.
Well, not the Captain Marvel crate, but I got this years ago, this minifig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Captain Marvel has often been on top of my mic flag.
Yep.
And there she is right now. And now I'm really getting the glowy hands. It's really coming to light because of the movie here. So
light.
As much as we want to talk about Captain Marvel, let's take a moment and let's talk about Stan Lee, because there was some awesome tips of the hat to him, including his cameo. And Stan Lee hasn't been with us for 5 months now, but it was just awesome seeing him in the movie. We didn't see him once. We saw him like a gazillion times. That's because they changed the Marvel logo pre-roll that they do in front of every movie. And they changed it to every single cameo that Stan has had on screen. Every one of them was in there. Did you guys just geek out over that when you saw it?
Okay, I yelled, "Oh God!" in the theater and then started weeping, which I did not expect to happen. And also, I was really worried I was going to be kicked out because, again, it's the Alamo and they get mad at you if you talk. And luckily, I ended up, actually, I was going to mention this later, but because I was really happy jamming out to all the soundtracks, because
it's such a great
soundtrack of my teenage years. And when Kelly Sue DeConnick had her cameo, I yelled, "Kelly Sue!"
I did too.
I was not expecting to do, but then she showed up. And I was really worried that afterwards, I was like, "Oh God, they're going to kick me out." So I apologized to the woman who was sitting next to me. I was like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was if I was weird, I was just really excited." She's like, no, I was too. I didn't notice you. I don't know if you noticed me, because I was also really excited." So we had this nice little bonding moment.
So Haley, how was your audience when you saw the pre-roll?
I don't know if anybody noticed, because I think a lot of people were still getting their drinks and stuff.
Okay, so you're part of that crowd that comes in and doesn't care about the trailers and just starts sitting down when the movie starts.
That was not my choice. Everyone else in my group wanted to hang out at the bar, not realizing you could keep getting drinks at your seats.
Ah.
People are dumb.
Okay, so my theater erupted. I think we talked about it last week. My theater erupted in applause for almost like 2 minutes. It went well into the movie and was just awesome. So you're talking about the theater trying to quiet down for the movie. In this case, nobody cared, because I saw it opening night and nobody had real heads up of what it was going to be. It took everybody by shock, and there was a bunch of gasps as it was starting to play, and there was a few cries. I heard some crying gas stuff, but it was great, and there was just applause afterwards. And then after the pre-roll, I don't know if they're going to continue this for the next few movies or not, but there was a black screen, and all it said on the black screen was three words: "Thank you, Stan." So amazing job by Marvel for pulling that off. And it's also an amazing job for pulling off his cameo. Did you guys see the whole backstory of this cameo?
He was reading the Mallrats script.
Yes.
and saying his line, rehearsing his line for Mallrats. Did you see Kevin Smith's response?
Did. When he was just like, right after he saw the movie, he posted a video of himself on Twitter and he's just weeping.
He had a slightly more composed, about 10-minute video on his YouTube channel, and he gave the whole backstory. Kevin Feige called him up out of the blue and said, "Hey, Kevin, how you doing?" And he said, "Hey, how's it going?" And he said he didn't even think in terms that Kevin Feige was calling Kevin Smith. He didn't think that Feige was calling Smith to say, "Hey, direct a film." He was knew that there was some other reason. He said, "Look, I'm going to spoil the movie, Captain Marvel movie coming up, but there's a good reason. So you can't tell anybody." And he said, "Okay, I won't tell anybody." So I don't know if that was as good as signing a non-disclosure agreement or not. He said, "Look, we're going to have Stan, or we've already filmed him. We filmed Stan doing his cameo and he's reading the Mallrats script, but his audio was weak because Stan was not in the best of health when he did the cameo." And Kevin Feige asked, "Do you still have the original recordings from Mallrats when you had Stan do the cameo there?" And Kevin Smith said, "I don't, but Universal probably does. You want me to call somebody?" And Kevin Feige said, "No, I'll take care of it." So that's how it was spoiled to him, but he didn't actually see it until opening night. So he was kind of crying during it and basically saying what a great tip of the hat it was to Stan's fans through fanboying out on Mallrats. So that was a neat story. If you haven't seen the video, go ahead and click on it. I'll have a link in the show notes. So Haley, you haven't seen it yet?
I've not seen the Kevin Smith video, but if you haven't seen Mallrats, you should also watch it because it is my favorite Kevin Smith movie.
You should. It's really fun. I watched it when I was probably younger than I should have. And yes, the Stan Lee cameo was probably the main reason why I did.
Also, I would not mind seeing Kevin Smith direct a Marvel film.
We'll see if that happens in the future or not. I don't know, especially if they do a team-up director. Hey, he could do that.
Let him direct an episode of something, at least.
Yeah, he's done like a ton of the CW shows.
Yeah.
He's directed episodes.
He's directed episodes in all the shows except for War One. I think it's Arrow that he has not directed yet.
That makes sense. It's a little darker than his typical style.
Yeah, and a lot more action-packed, so I don't know.
Yeah, maybe let him do one of the Loki episodes.
Oh, that would be so good.
So getting back to the cameo, did you guys notice that Captain Marvel kind of paused afterwards and the camera was looking up at her and there was nothing else that you could see in the car, in the train car or anything? You guys notice that?
Yeah, I saw her just do the little like, "Yeah, nice."
I think they must have added that in post to make definite sure that everybody keyed in on that moment and that there was a big pause because none of the other train was shown. I think they must have done it in a reshoot later, basically. So I didn't mind, didn't care. It was a great cameo and it was great seeing Stan on the screen again.
So there was a couple things about that scene that kind of broke the movie. First of all, Stan Lee doing that cameo in this universe means that the Marvel Universe exists within the Marvel Universe. Therefore, brain break. Whatever. It's fun. I don't care.
It's okay, because I think the universe is already kind of broken that way, too.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really matter. Whatever. It's fun. We know the Captain America comics exist in the Marvel Universe, so whatever.
Yeah, maybe that's what they're referencing, is the Captain America comics that were written about the actual Captain America. Fine. Headcanon accepted.
It's fine. The Mallrats. When did this movie take place? We know the movie took place in 1995.
I think it's supposed to be 1995, which is the only reason I excuse them for not including a Spice Girl song.
Well, that movie takes place in 1995, but I think somebody estimated it takes place around June of 95.
Wow. I wouldn't guess the month, but okay.
Alta Vista wasn't released until December of 95. Mallrats didn't come out until something like August of 95. So he would have had to have filmed his cameo really
late. Also, within the Marvel Universe, there were super soldiers and Hydra and stuff, and those things did not exist in our timeline. So maybe some things shifted around, which is also why I'm okay with that train being there, because apparently that train wasn't built until like 2000.
Also, I woke up from a dead sleep. I fell asleep at like, I don't know, really late. that night, I woke up at like 4 o'clock. No, wait, I fell asleep normal time, but I woke up at 4 o'clock the next morning because I was in a lot of pain. But the first thought I had upon waking up and basically just sitting straight up was, Celebrity Skin wasn't released until 1998. The song that plays in the end credits.
Oh, then there definitely should have been a Spice Girls song.
Exactly, right? If they were going to do Celebrity Skin, they could have done Spice Up Your Life. Come on.
Well, I know the movie had to have taken place after April 1st, 1992, because that is when The Right Stuff was released on video.
So the movie, the timeline's a little wibbly-wobbly, a little Jeremy Bear-me, but you know what? I'll allow it. It's fun. It's more about the feel and the attitude than actually being historically accurate. I've been reviewing lately enough period movies that aren't historically accurate at all that I don't really care. So,
no, I don't care either. The only reason I know this is because of Butthurt fanboys that have been pointing it all out.
Yeah. Oh my God, the Butthurt fanboys. Blech.
After seeing the movie for a second time, there's a few things that I noticed, but I didn't care because I like the movie a lot. Okay, I'll spoil it. I like this movie. This is my favorite MCU movie. So yeah, go figure. I might be a little biased.
I can't say that after seeing it one time, but I really, really liked it.
I wanted to see it again before we recorded.
Me too.
But I've been really sick lately, so I haven't had a chance.
Yeah, I watched it a second time and I want to watch it again. Matter of fact, if I would be able to go from work every day and go to the movie theater and watch it, I think it would be fine between now and Endgame.
Just sign up for a movie pass.
Yeah, right.
Movie
it's such
pass.
A good bargain these days.
Right. Well, the money isn't exactly the issue, although I didn't think about that aspect of it. It would be just time.
Time is a precious resource.
Yeah. Since Guardians of the Galaxy, it's like the Marvelverse has decided that space is retro. So since this is sort of space, sort of Earth, it's sort of retro. Because I refuse to think of the 90s as being retro. Oh, God, you guys, the 90s cannot be retro.
The 90s is retro.
Oh.
I know. I'm old, so like the 70s is like probably the 90s to you.
I was thinking about that the other day because on the, not easy listening, but like the mix station, they're playing songs from, you know, my teenage years and stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, this is what my parents felt like when they were driving me to school and they had it on the mix station and it was playing songs from the 70s.
Kids born in 1998 can drink.
I hate you.
So my favorite radio station, as long as we're going to be on this right now, and I just stumbled upon it because I asked the A Word to play a certain song, and she didn't play the song, but she directed me to the iHeart radio station Popcorn Music Station. I think it's called Popcorn Radio Station. That's it. So that is my favorite radio station right now. And it's just a bunch of movie songs from all eras, and you can jam out. Now, some songs repeat, so they definitely have music license issues where they don't have an unlimited library. But it's pretty neat and cool because as you're listening to these songs, you're like, that's from this movie. And then the announcer comes on and tells you either before or after the song, and no commercials. So, yeah, nice. I like listening to it.
I've been listening to the 90s pop and 90s alternative stations because that music makes me feel happy.
And it's all about making Lauren feel happy. So
it is.
I diverted the whole discussion by going into Stan Lee, as we should have. But let's get back to Carol Danvers or Veers or Captain Marvel. Haley, you were really excited to talk about Veers. So what do you got for me?
No, I was really excited to get into the changes they made.
Yeah, let's talk about the changes.
The changes to the origin.
Yes.
As Lauren was saying, Mar-Vell was the first Captain Marvel, and he was a he, and he was a Kree. In the movie, they changed the relationship between Carol and Mar-Vell to more of a mentor and protege type of relationship. Mar-Vell is now a woman, and I very much liked that, and I very much liked that there was not a romance storyline in this.
Yes.
There was some speculation that there might be a romance with Maria. I'm glad there was not. Because not that that would be wrong or anything, but it meant more as they were close friends.
They were family, essentially. Yeah, like they
much,
even
yeah.
say Carol did not have a good relationship with her own family. So Maria and Monica became her family. I ship them. Basically, I ship Carol and everyone. When it comes to Avengers, when it comes to Marvel, I basically ship everyone.
Carol and Valkyrie is the new internet
Brie
ship.
Larson and Tessa Thompson ship them. So,
yep. I like the idea of the reason she doesn't have a close relationship with her family is because she was gay. And that's why she has this close friendship with somebody else, because she needed a family. It doesn't have to have been a romantic relationship.
Yeah. Whether you ship it romantically or platonically, I love that the closest relationship that we see in the movie, well, we see kind of the budding friendship between her and Nick Fury. And I wish, that's one of my complaints. I wish we got more time with her and with Carol and Maria, because the time that we do have with them is so good.
One of the issues that I did have with the movie, especially after watching it the second time, and I don't know if it was cut for editing or it was intentionally filmed this way, is that she had a bunch of confrontation growing up with somebody, whether it was her dad, a brother, a friend, whatever. I'm wondering, was the friend when she was young and then at the academy, the upperclassman, and that the other pilot getting in her face and saying that's why they call it a cockpit, was that supposed to be the same character all along?
I think it's supposed to be the same kind of guy that you meet everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not the same person. It's the same archetype, though.
Yeah. Every woman I know has met several of that guy. I know I have.
I don't want to minimize what you're saying, but that was my opinion, was that it was like a storyline that was dropped. At least that's what it looked like to me after watching it the second time. And I could see why you wouldn't want it in there, but I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be the same character or not.
I don't think it was, but I do bet there was a much longer cut of this movie where you saw more in her past.
That is one of my complaints with this movie, is when it comes to the beginning of the movie, I feel like we spent a little too long with Veers, and I think we could have spent a little more time with Carol.
That's another issue that I had with the movie, by the way, was the name Veers, and here's why. Because the dog tag was broken apart, and what was picked up was Veers. However, her flight suit clearly had her entire name tag on it when she was lying on the ground. I caught that in the second watch.
Well, they weren't going to call her by her whole name, though, because they don't want to risk triggering memories.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it was just
their lazy way of giving her a fake new name.
All right. Well, they knew her name, basically, then, if they could read English, which I assume they could.
Yeah, I assume the translator works on written form as well.
Okay. Now, fortunately, Michelle couldn't be with us tonight for reasons, but she did put in the show notes about the origin story, and she wanted to point out that Captain Marvel's origin was great because it wasn't a traditional Marvel Cinematic Universe cocky origin story. In Iron Man, Tony was cocky and he's broken and then rises to be a hero. Thor's cocky in the original Thor movie, and then he gets broken, sent to Earth, and then becomes a hero there. And in Guardians of the Galaxy, the team is cocky as they meet, which is hilarious, but I still love that movie, and gets beaten, and then they come together to do the hero thing. Carol wasn't cocky at all. She was just trying to do the right thing. And even when she was a Kree warrior with the Star Force, she wasn't really cocky, although she was a little sarcastic, but I don't think that's cocky. And then she rose up.
The thing about Carol is, through the whole movie, she has a sense of her own self-confidence. Even when you have Yon-Rogg trying to kind of undermine her, there's still that sense of, I know what I can do. When she gets to Earth and she's sort of out of her element as far as she knows, and she's getting these flashes and she's more uncertain, she's still like, okay, well, I know what I need to do. I know what I need to do to get from point A to point B to point C. And it's just a case of, she's more like Captain America in that sense. Captain America was never cocky and needed to get beat down to be a hero. He always has a sense of himself, and just needs kind of the time and the impetus. Carol is that same way. She has the sense of herself, and she just needs that push.
I literally had chills running up and down my spine at one point in the movie, and it happened both times that I saw it. So I don't think it's a singular thing. It's probably one of the reasons why I just love the movie and could see it every day. It was when she was being held hostage in Mar-Vell's cruiser, and she was in the Supreme Intelligence, where she was wrapped in the Matrix stuff, and she was being beaten down basically, and Mar-Vell in the as the Supreme Intelligence was telling her what can be given can be taken away, and also says you're not Kree, you're human. And you just see, it's not a like a smirk or anything. You could just see in her eyes, she's like, I realize what's going on. Yeah, of course, I'm human. And she gets up. And then there's that montage of her getting up in all of the previous scenes, some of which we didn't actually see too much of earlier in the film. But she's getting up and she's fighting back. And that was just a, such a powerful moment that it just drove me to have chills up and down my spine, which does not happen in a movie, but it was great. And then she takes that little inhibitor off the back of her neck and she becomes the superhero that she's been all along, but didn't know that she was. That was just an amazing moment.
Which I would have to rewatch it, but I think that's the same inhibitor we saw in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It is. And that's one of the things I want to mention. First of all, there's a quote from the Kelly Sue DeConnick run of Captain Marvel that I was really hoping they'd figure out a way to use somehow. I'm going to read it real quick. Have you ever seen a little girl run so fast she falls down? There's an instant, a fraction of a second before the world catches hold of her again. A moment when she's outrun every doubt and fear she's ever had about herself and she flies. In that one moment, every little girl flies. And that scene, that's what it reminded me of. That when you see the flashback of her, every time she falls and she gets back up, that's what it was reminding me of, that quote. Because that's Carol, that's Cap. They fall, they get back up, just that much more determined. And the other thing, coming into the movie with the whole, yeah, Kree, yeah, I was like, but wait a minute, we know the Kree from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They're jerks. They're horrible. I'm really interested in seeing how they reconcile this. And then it turns out, oh no, they were horrible the whole time. We were right. And that little inhibitor, when I saw it, I was like, there's something about it that's bugging me. And halfway through the movie, it hit me. That's the same inhibitors that we saw last season. And I kind of did a little happy dance in my seat. So we have, again, the Kree being D-bags and the inhibitors. And I think this might be the closest to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that we've had connected to the movies in a while.
Also, I think this is the first time we've seen something go from the show to the movies instead of the other way around.
I think it might be.
Probably. I liked the Kree, the little strike team. I just liked them. It was so well done. And Minerva, I loved her.
Why weren't they blue?
Yeah. And what was really cool is when Maria and Minerva were having a little dogfight in the canyon. My mind, and I don't know if this is true or not, I'd have to do a scene by scene comparison once I get the Blu-ray, but I'm pretty sure it was shot for shot with the Independence Day canyon dogfight.
Oh, that would be cool, because that was also 1995, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I was wondering if they were going to do the same thing where she...
Welcome to Earth!
Yeah, where she would pull up and then, yeah, welcome to Earth and everything. It didn't happen because she blew up. Minerva is no longer, at least I assume Minerva did survive that.
Captain Marvel 2, Minerva's Revenge. I'd be here for that. I really love Gemma Chan. If you haven't seen Crazy Rich Asians, she is amazing in Crazy Rich Asians.
It's actually the next Blu-ray that I'm going to buy. You know what?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I have it. I don't have the Blu-ray, but I bought the digital copy and I just haven't seen it yet. It's on Vudu for me, yeah. Or Movies Anywhere or whatever.
She's fantastic.
All right. So the other thing that's been back and forth since we're talking about connections back and forth, of course, the Tesseract. We see the Tesseract again in the MCU.
And that's where Captain Marvel's powers came from.
So is she still powered by the Tesseract?
Oh, God. We have had so many discussions about that here in my house.
Because if she is, and the Tesseract is actually part of Thanos' gauntlet...
Can he snap her powers away?
Yeah.
I don't think she is still powered by it. I think...
It activated something in her?
Well, the power of the Tesseract was being beamed basically into this engine. The engine exploded, so... I would say part of the power of the Tesseract was funneled directly from its source in the Tesseract through the engine into her when it blew up.
Well, a big part of the Tesseract is that it's energy. So I assume it's just an energy transfer, and that energy is in her now, but it's not controlled by the Tesseract.
Oh. So if she's part Tesseract, maybe she could do something with the gauntlet, like fuse with the gauntlet or something like that?
Or be immune to its powers?
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll see. Endgame is just a few weeks away now.
Oh, it's amazing. Man.
April is going to be so stressful.
It's going to be the best birthday present ever. And the saddest.
Okay, Fury, you got to call him Fury. There's no more Nick Fury anymore. It's just Fury.
Even his mom calls him Fury.
My kids, if they have them, will call me Fury.
Yeah, we know that's not true. Oh my God. Okay, seeing relatively fresh-faced Nick Fury looking like he did in The Negotiator and seeing fresh-faced Coulson. That was just
rookie.
That was so good. Yeah, rookie Coulson. And
I did appreciate the de-aging technology. I thought Nick Fury, Samuel Jackson, looked a little bit odd. Coulson looked less odd, but he just, wasn't right, wasn't 100%.
I thought Coulson looked like he was making a face the whole time. That's right. Part of the problem.
I think he was also channeling a bit of Iron Man Coulson, where he was very... His face in that movie, he was trying to make himself look as bland as possible.
He looked kind of like he was scowling in this one.
He was just like, the whole time. And, oh God. So I saw a bunch of complaints like, Nick Fury's so out of character. Nah. So here's what I think. Nick Fury thinks that Nick Fury at this point in time thinks that he's seen it all because he's seen a lot of stuff in terms of Earth conflicts. We know that he'd, you know, helped out, what's his face, Robert Redford's character.
Oh, I want to say Red Skull, and that's not right.
No. Pierce.
Pierce, yeah.
Pierce. But that was in like a strictly, you know, mundane military type of thing. He thinks he's jaded, but now he's seeing that not only are there aliens, but there's shape-shifting aliens, there's energy-blasting aliens, there's alien invaders. There's all sorts of stuff out there. So, yeah, now after this, he has time to get his paranoia up and ramping. And especially after he gets his eye, he loses his eye to an infected cat scratch, you guys. An infected Flerken scratch.
What if he has superpowers from that now?
If you injure yourself in a really embarrassing way from experience, there's only two ways that you can play it. You can either own it, which is what I do, or you can build up a mythology about it so that people will stop asking you about it, which is what several people I know have done. And that's what he chooses to do. So he has to become the scary guy because you cannot respect somebody if you know they lost an eye to a cat scratch infection to just a cute little kitty cat that lives in their office.
So what about this for an Easter egg? Thor's eye is actually in the case that is presented to Fury at the end of the movie.
Or Thor gives him that one when he like uses his Asgard powers to grow his back. Or Rocket's just got a bunch of them like in a pouch somewhere.
They could be eye swap buddies.
So one thing that, you know, the internet has been talking about is like, why didn't Fury page Carol before? I like to think that he did, and she just always gets there after it's already fixed. And she's like, again? Seriously? Are you prank calling me?
They just like have dinner and leave. I really love the friendship between them because Carol's a troll.
Yeah. So she gets back after all these things happen, and he takes her to a bar and tells her, you know, what went down. And she tells him about, you know, her intergalactic adventures. And they part again for, you know, a few more years until he pages her again.
After everything, like, Chitauri attack on New York.
Yeah, like all the big things that you're like, man, I wish I had a superhero here to fix this.
It was great seeing the Sky Captain back on screen.
What?
Jude Law?
Jude Law, Sky Captain in the World Tomorrow.
I haven't watched that movie in a long time.
Jude Law was amazing in the role. I'm glad, I'm not going to spend too much time on him, but I'm glad Jude Law was in the role.
He's usually amazing. So, two things. Early on in his career, Jude Law was, you know, the heartthrob and all this stuff. And now he's been cast in mostly a bunch of villain roles, I've noticed in the past few years. It's like you reach a point as an older British dude where you just get cast as a villain. Ben Mendelsohn, also, who played Talos, the main Skrull, who you might know as Orson Krennic from Rogue One. He's the bad guy in Ready Player One. In Australia, his native country, in his early career, he was kind of a heartthrob. And then now that he's older, he gets cast in a bunch of villain roles. So I was honestly really shocked that he wasn't the bad guy in this one.
Yeah, it came across really cool. We'll get to this. Let me go back to Jon Rogg for a second. Who do you guys think he sees in the Supreme Intelligence? They reference it so much that I think it's going to come back again.
God, I don't know. I don't know enough about Jon Rogg, the character.
Does he see Ronan? Does he see Thanos? Does he see himself? Does he see... I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like he's not, like, enough to be an ongoing villain.
I think that if we get a Captain Marvel 2, and I think we will, I think you're going to see her going to the Kree homeworld, Hala, and she's going to do what she set out to do, because they explicitly say, that's what I'm going to do, and I'm sending you back with a message, so I can only see this coming back.
But I don't think he would be the main villain in that. I think he would be somebody dispatched early on in the film, if he's even back, because now that she's fully powered, he doesn't stand a chance against her.
Yeah, which is why he holstered the gun and said, let's do it without the hand.
And she did the whole indie thing where it's like, yeah, you have fun with that sword.
Yeah, I don't need to prove myself to you. Whatever.
I'm pretty sure I made audible sounds at that.
I was getting angry at that point. I was like, oh, you're an idiot if you do this. You're an idiot if you do this. And then she just blasted him and I was like, yes!
It was on par with when Peggy Carter said, you know, I know my worth.
Yes.
I hope they do time travel and I hope they meet.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that would... Oh, God, please.
So, back to Talos, because you guys started talking about him. Watch this the second time. He just gets better the second time because you understand where he's coming from the beginning, and you don't really look at him as a bad guy from the beginning, and that he is not an imminent threat to Carol Danvers. And it's just a joy watching Talos throughout it and the incompetence that's around him.
Ben Mendelsohn is a really charming dude. Just any interview you watch him in, he's a lot of fun. He's just this really chill, funny dude. And here he brings it. I love the whole him drinking the soda, the same cup Sam Jackson does in Pulp Fiction, which again, 1995. He's so good. And then making the Skrulls be good guys, having them be just refugees. It's so good. I was so happy that Marvel got back the rights to the Skrulls. And yes, the fact that they're using the Kree. And this gives me a lot of hope that if we get any of the Young Avengers in the future, that maybe we could get Teddy Altman with his actual canonical backstory, which is he's the illicit son of a Kree and a Skrull. In fact, he's actually, I think, supposed to be Mar-Vell's son. And we find out, you know, Mar-Vell has been helping these Skrulls because, hey, guess what? They're the victims of this forever war. They have no home. Their home's been destroyed. They're in a diaspora. They just want to stop fighting and have somewhere to call home. And the Kree, who, as we have seen previously, are D-bags, are like, no, if they won't be enslaved, then we need to destroy them. It's like Rome. Rome always had to have... Actually, it's like most big countries. You always have to have the enemy. Rome had the Gauls. We used to have the communists, et cetera, et cetera.
So Annette Bening played Dr. Winnie Lawson in the Supreme Intelligence. I was just amazed by her performance. It definitely cast right there, or at least it pulled it off amazingly with her. Loved her in The American President, loved her in Regarding Henry. It was just great to see her again in something. She just pulled the role off, both roles, because she played two different roles. She pulled it off great, and it was great casting. So whoever did the casting for this, I don't know if it's necessarily the directors or not, but whoever did the casting did a great job.
In general, Marvel casting has been pretty good.
They really are.
Including Goose.
Goose. Okay, can we please talk about Goose?
I'm surprised it's taken this long.
I believe we intro'd the show talking about cats.
So I have an orange cat, and we have been calling him Flerkin since we saw the movie.
Gonna give him an identity crisis.
Well, we already call him like a billion different things.
No wonder he destroys your apartment.
Yeah, because cats usually respond so well to their names.
I like that Strange Earth or whatever comic that came out. There was one about a cat.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is a thing. I will call it by its name and it will not respond.
So, we know that the Tesseract is at least upsetting to a Flerkin stomach.
Oh, God. At the end of the movie. So, the whole movie. Oh, it's a cat. It's a cat. And the crew are like, no, that thing's a Flerkin. And they're like, eh. And the whole time, I'm just hoping. I've been hoping and praying for months. Please let this cat be a Flerkin like he is in the comics. Please let the cat be a Flerkin like he is in the comics. Sure enough, the cat launches tentacles out of his mouth and eats a bunch of bad guys. And then eats the Tesseract. And just so good.
I love that they waited until that far into the movie to confirm it so that you think these Skrulls are just being paranoid the whole time.
It's like the Mummy. You know, in the Mummy, the 1997 one, when the Mummy is scared of cats. Imhotep is scared of cats. That's what it kept reminding me of. They're just like, ugh.
Did you have like a sudden urge to find some paper towels at the end when the cat is making like the dry heaving sounds?
As soon as it jumped off that desk, I'm like, I know where this is going. Every cat owner knows where this is going. And then the starts. I'm like, yep, yep. It was either going to be that or there was going to be a Tesseract in the litter box.
At least Goose was, he seemed settled afterwards. So that was good. The fights in this was just amazing because Carol Danvers, at first, when she's having her memory probed and she's got her hands in the cuffs and everything, that fight was great, including when she burned out of them.
Have you seen the little behind the scenes video of that when it's like before they'd started filming or in between resetting, and it's Brie Larson in the little things and the people, the Skrulls, and they're having a dance party on the set?
No, I have not seen that.
It's on Twitter. It's so good.
Get some LEDs on those cuffs there.
Have a rave.
And then you're talking about Flerkin Goose and his tentacles. That was a lot. The effect was a lot like Groot and when he went after everybody, but a little bit different, a little bit faster, a little bit swipier, but similar effect there. You had the dog fight we mentioned before with Rambo versus Minerva, which is great. Having Maria and Minerva go head to head there. And at the end, where Carol, she's not saying anything. She doesn't have any dialogue whatsoever, but she's in space and she just single-handedly completely destroys a Kree battleship and was like, okay, you want to take this further? Or do you want to like get out of here? And they left.
Yep. The chains are off. And she does the equivalent of giving, like, a space middle finger to them.
Pretty much. All right. Any last thoughts about the movie, Lauren?
I still think the beginning was a bit slow until she gets to Earth. I wish that part was maybe 20% less, and we got about 20% more of her just with Maria. But other than that, it's fun. It takes me back to just the 90s aesthetic. I know there's so many good little 90s jokes like the dial-up and floppy disks and Alta Vista and
pagers.
Yeah. Oh, the soundtrack. Oh, God, I love the soundtrack. Although, seriously, how could you have her wearing a Nine Inch Nails shirt and not play any Nine Inch Nails? Come on.
Really some missed opportunities with the soundtrack. Like, as good as it was.
Yeah. Lose the flannel.
No, the flannel stays. The flannel is essential.
Brie Larson looks great in a baseball cap, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Haley, any last words about the movie?
I really loved it. I wish I'd been able to see it again before we did the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you'll see it again. We can talk about it on a future show.
Also, I finally watched Ant-Man and the Wasp because I watched it right before I went to see Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. How'd you like it?
It was good.
Yes. I just rewatched it yesterday, day before? Question mark.
I've had all the MCU movies on a playlist, basically, yeah, going round and round and round on the Great Room TV as I'm like editing or something like that. I've been through all of them and I'm just going through them again right now. I'm at Thor. Captain America, the First Avenger was the last one I did. So Avengers will be the next one that I do. Can't wait for Endgame. I don't know if I'm going to go opening night like I did with Captain Marvel, but I will go opening weekend.
It's my birthday present to myself. I am going opening night.
Okay. So just really quick, we usually talk about trailers and I didn't want to make a big deal about it this time, but I saw a lot of these trailers twice. So I saw Hobbs and Shaw. Okay. Another Fast and Furious movie with Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham being the heroes in that one. Long Shot with Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron. Okay. Shazam. It looks fun. I don't know if I'm going to see that opening weekend or not, but I want to see it eventually. Saw the same Spider-Man Far From Home that we talked about before. Rocket Man, which looks like a good biopic. X-Men Dark Phoenix. Saw that trailer before. Okay. Saw it on the big screen. Frozen 2, that was a new one for me. I haven't seen the first Frozen. Believe it or not, I have not seen the first Frozen. I own the movie. I have not seen it. So I don't know if I should be excited about this or not. And Dumbo. And honestly, the Dumbo trailer is turning me off just because of kind of the suspenseful way. It's probably trying to come off as magical. But for me, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And then the second time through, I saw a bunch of them second time, except for I saw Ugly Dolls, which, okay. I don't know. I guess I'm too old and I'm not really intrigued by those sorts of things anymore. Lauren, you saw some trailers. Do you have anyone of note that you want to talk about?
Captive State. I think it just came out, or if it's just coming out. Yeah, I really want to see that one. So gonna have to.
Okay. So next time we'll be back with our Runaways watch, in some cases rewatch. We're doing season one. We're at episode 5 right now, and we're going through that before the start of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Endgame. So that's what we'll be talking about next time. Meantime, let's get into a little bit of news.
First up, let's talk numbers. We've got the Captain Marvel box office. So this is as of March 18th, 2019.
So basically the first two weekends.
Opening weekend, $153 million, which I think was like the sixth or fifth highest Marvel box office opening weekend for a solo film. Or no, it's the highest solo film, I thought.
It was the fourth highest opening in March ever.
Yeah, it's a really, really good box office number. And it's, as of right now, $270 million total domestic, $779 million worldwide. So it's going to make $1 billion.
It started trailing off pretty much the second weekend, but
most of the big box offices do these days, because there's another big box office that'll come out.
Right, but I'm going to see it again before Endgame at least one more time.
I bet you'll see a spike again in April, like right before Endgame comes out, as a bunch of people go to see it again.
If it's still in the box office in another 5 weeks, I guess. It's just 5 weeks, but...
Yeah. All right. Another story, we've been talking about this one for a while. The Disney and Fox merger acquisition thing is officially complete. It's happened. It's happened. It's over.
Yeah, this news story came out earlier today, and as we're recording, in 2 hours, it is going to be a done deal. It's not officially a done deal. As we're recording, of course, when this podcast comes out, it'll be done and everything. So there was an EW.com article by Nick Romano that was published at 11 a.m. Eastern time today. And there's a few things of note here. I'm going to go through them really quick. Quote, to quote a certain mystical incline neurosurgeon, we're in the end game now. So little knee slapper there. By 12:02 a.m. Eastern Time on the morning of Wednesday, March 20th, the Walt Disney Company's acquisition of 21st Century Fox will be complete, putting the cap on the long gestated negotiation that will see the merging of these two Hollywood houses. The deal, first announced in December 2017 with a multi-billion dollar price tag, will see Disney absorb the 21st Century Fox movie and TV divisions. That includes film rights to X-Men, Deadpool, and Fantastic Four, as well as the Avatar franchise from James Cameron. While the two companies worked out the kinks of this merger, thereby inflating the initial $52.4 billion to $71.3 billion, after a rival bid from Comcast, some projects seemed to be in limbo, like the New Mutants and the future of the Deadpool films. And Ryan Reynolds had an interesting couple of things out now, by the way, because he has basically inserted himself into the Endgame trailer, but also he sent out a tweet today on his Twitter account, Vancity Reynolds, and he said, "Feels like the first day of pool," and it's him in a Disney school bus, or photoshopped in a Disney school bus, with the Disney mouse ears on top of his head. So he is all for Team Disney right now.
You know what the funniest thing about the story you just shared with us was? That they're referring to Avatar as a franchise, even though one movie is all that has ever been released and is all I ever believe will be released.
Well, isn't there a theme park portion of Avatar somewhere?
It's going to be a trilogy or four movies or eight movies or however many movies James Cameron feels like saying it's going to be.
Yeah, it could. I don't know. Yeah, I inserted that specifically to talk about Avatar and... Yeah. Another thing of note is that Sigourney Weaver is now a blue Disney princess.
All right. Well, there's another James who directs movies, James Gunn, and he has been reinstated as the Guardians of the Galaxy 3 director.
Yeah, we've been talking about this since it happened, and we've discussed that the cast wrote a letter asking Marvel, hey, don't do this. Dave Bautista specifically said, I'm not doing a movie unless James Gunn directs it.
Well, I thought he said it unless they used his script.
Well,
was specifically what he said.
They said they're going to use his script.
Yeah.
I thought he said he wasn't going to do it unless he directs it.
But yeah, he's back.
Yeah, he's back.
He is still doing Suicide Squad 2, and Guardians of the Galaxy 3 will come out after that, because he's going to direct it after that. But apparently, the thing I heard was that he had been reinstated a while ago, and Disney just hadn't made that information public until now.
I could kind of see that, because also within a day, Neil deGrasse Tyson was also cleared to come back into his projects as well. So I don't know if it was the timing, like late in the week, or if it was they were just waiting for like a slow news cycle or something to hide it and not bring it back with a lot of fanfare. Of course, everybody's that knows about it is really heralding it with a lot of fanfare because of the particular circumstances. And we're not going to get political here, but it was suspect when Disney had to pull the plug on the whole thing.
And but I believe he'll be the first director in the Marvel franchise to finish his trilogy of movies.
I think so.
Yeah. Interesting.
Since Jon Favreau didn't direct Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm. The Russo brothers have done three movies, but they weren't really three that necessarily went together.
Yeah.
No, it was two Captain Americas and an Avengers movie, right?
Is it one Captain America
one and two Captain Avengers? America and two Avengers movies.
Oh, wait,
two
did Avengers. They do two Captain Americas?
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah.
So yes. They've really done four?
Yeah.
But two of each?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. There are so many Marvel movies, you guys.
I know. Wow. Actually, right now, I don't know. What is there? 17, 18, 19, 20? I have no idea.
Oh, it's over 20.
Like 23.
Oh, my gosh.
By the time we get to Endgame.
All right. I'll have to count before we podcast next time. Well, congratulations, James. Welcome back aboard. And we look forward to a great Guardians of the Galaxy 3, because I was really wondering what they were going to do with the franchise without him, because in my mind, James Gunn is Guardians of the Galaxy.
True story.
So we had a little bit of feedback in the past week that we want to run through really quick. Lauren, what do you got to start?
First off, from Twitter, we have at Mr. Paracletes, who sent us a picture, made me laugh, so I had to include it, of Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner with, you know, remember from Avengers, the first one, What does Fury want me to do? Swallow it? Little picture of Goose in the corner. I wouldn't recommend it.
Nope.
Bruce Banner coughing up a Tesseract hairball. What?
And we're going to find out really soon if that really is Banner or if it might be Loki hiding behind there. So we'll see.
We also have from Discord, in response to Captain Marvel and people talking about it, AliRun03 said, it was a great movie. Even the wife who doesn't do superhero movies liked it. And SP responded with,
I put Thor, the 2011 movie, on in the great room this afternoon. My wife was sitting there folding laundry. She has not yet seen Thor. She has now. Upon seeing Jane Foster, she said, oh, I like her. And that is a reference to her movie that she did, Where the Heart Is, with the baby in Walmart and stuff like that. Anyway, that's why she likes her. Then upon seeing Thor, she said, are Thor and Captain Marvel friends? So this was after we saw Captain Marvel, and she's seen this. Are Thor and Captain Marvel friends? And she had not seen the trailer for Endgame yet. So in my best Chris Hemsworth voice, I said, yes, he likes that one. So now I know I'll need to couch everything in terms of who is friends and who is not friends with Captain Marvel.
That seems wise. And we also have a voicemail.
Yep. This is from Consultant Black Adam.
Hey guys, this is Consultant Black Adam calling in with some of my thoughts about Captain Marvel, which I've seen twice already and plan to see at least once more while it's still in theaters. First off, the origin story of Carol getting her powers is surprisingly close to what it originally was in the comics, where she was caught in the middle of a battle between Mar-Vell and Yon-Rogg, and an overloaded device gave her powers. Though in this version, she had a lot more agency, being the one to actually blow up the device. I'm glad they set up not showing the Supreme Intelligence's true form from the beginning, because it really looks stupid in the comics. Another just random thing is that all of the alternate costume color schemes in the scene with Monica, except the neon one, have been used by one version of Captain Marvel or another in the comics, which was a nice touch. Speaking of Monica, I like that they sort of combined her with Kit, Carol's neighbor from the Kelly Sue DeConnick run in the comics, in terms of the nickname Lieutenant Trouble and trying to help Carol remember herself after she lost her memories. And speaking of Kelly Sue, she had a cameo in the movie, which was nice. And, wow, another good transition. Speaking of people with cameos, that Stan Lee Marvel Studios introduction needs to stay around for at least the other two movies coming out this year, if not longer. I love how Indiana Jones, like the fight between Carol and Yon-Rogg at the end after he crash landed was, where he was like, yeah, fight me without your powers. And she was like, nope, blast. And just one last thing, sort of overall plot connection. I wonder if there is any connection between the Kree-Skrull War, which has clearly been going on for a while here, and the Kree-Nova War, which ended shortly before Guardians of the Galaxy and led to Ronan going rogue and becoming the villain he was there. Just little tie-in that I thought might be interesting.
Thank you very much, Black Adam, for that voicemail. We will take all your voicemails in the future, not only from Adam, but from everybody else. And once again, that number is 1-844-THE-BUS-1 or 844-843-2871. Ladies, I think it's time that you, Photon Blast, this one out. This was a fun one. Thank you, ladies, for doing this on late on a Tuesday night. Really appreciate that. And thank you to everybody that is still subscribed to the show and then is giving us feedback and talking to us in Discord, Twitter, and everywhere else. We really appreciate you being a part of the podcast.
Thank you so much to everybody who listens to us. who stops and look at us on YouTube. We love knowing that you love Marvel, that you like to hear us talk. Thank you guys so much. We love you and have a great week.
Yeah. Thank you to everybody that's listening. Thank you to everybody that went and saw the movie and made it had a great opening night. And thank you to everybody that sends us feedback. We love you all.
Indeed. So until next time, I'm Director SP.
I'm Agent Haley.
I'm Agent Lauren.
See you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.
Higher, further, faster, more.
Thank you for listening. If you want to leave us feedback, go to gunnageek.com and you will find all our contact information and other shows. You can also visit legendsofshield.com where you'll find our complete archive of podcasts. The music heard on this podcast is by Kevin MacLeod, found at incompetech.com and also artists on pond5.com and audiojungle.net. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of the individual hosts and do not represent Stargate Pioneer Productions, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., or Gunna Geek. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the property of the Disney Corporation, Marvel Studios, and ABC. No infringement is intended.
Hey, how's it going? Oh, that good, huh?
I can be human for an hour, so.
And then you're going to turn into a Flurkin?
We've been calling the cat a Flurkin all week.
How that?
All 2 weeks, however long it's been.
Apparently, there's been some really good toys out.
Yeah, I need to get a couple of them.
I'm back.
Got a Flurkin. I had curry for dinner, and he's been trying to get at it. Why don't you behave?
Because he's a cat.
Yeah, and he's a jack.
When's Scott coming back?
Thursday.
It's a couple days away.
Yeah.
Be back in time to watch the basketball tournament.
Scott doesn't care about basketball.
Neither do I, but fill out a bracket.
Really, I only care about the Spurs.
Sure. I get that. I don't care about any college team. I just care about the bracket.
I like A&M.
Not surprised. Are you taking a tumble?
Huh?
Are you taking a tumble?
What do you mean?
Are you in the tumbler hole?
Oh, no. I'm looking at BuzzFeed quizzes.
Broadcast has been successfully terminated by Brie Larson.
Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is copyright 2013 through 2019.